All right. Well, hello, everyone out there. I'm Dan, and this is Neil from Gnostic Informant. You want to introduce yourself, Neil?
Yeah, man. My name is Neil from the channel Gnostic Informant. I do videos about ancient history, but mostly mythology, comparative religion, the Bible, the New Testament, Jesus, stuff like that. You remind me a lot about myself. We're both amateurs, but we don't have PhDs. I'm not published, but I have been reading primary sources and academic papers for quite some time now. Seriously, for about 3 years, a little less serious. I would say give a little buffer of 5, and then just for fun, 10 plus. I've been really interested in this stuff. So I just kind of started my channel, and I wanted to interview a bunch of experts in the field who have different thoughts on, because I noticed that people disagree a lot in academia. And I wanted to get a bunch of different experts on who have different thoughts on ancient mythology, the Bible, Jesus, Dionysus, whatever. And that's what I started doing. I started doing interviews. Now I do documentaries and interviews. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, you have quite a bunch of stuff on your channel, actually, a lot of different topics, but yeah, definitely seems to focus on the Bible and ancient.
And I'm like you, I'm very critical of scholars that I think are lazy. You'll see me get real spicy about that stuff.
Yeah, well, you can understand. I mean, really, I'm not a Christian anymore. I was when I was a much younger man, but I know that Christianity is frequently the same as Atlantis, honey. It's just conflated with all the bad things in the world. It's like, oh, well, traditionally your religion has supported X, Y, Z, and therefore, so I'm sure that you get that eventually rubs a guy the wrong way just too long. And eventually it's like, you know what, man, the gloves are on the floor now. Dude, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, things aren't that black and white. There's always gray areas. There's always nuances. These things aren't just one way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, hello to everyone in the chat. I have a lot of people saying hi, and everybody make sure, and if you haven't subscribed to Gnostic Informant, the link to his stuff's down below. You probably have heard of him before you heard of me, as quite a bit larger following, but if not, it's down below. I'm often amazed at how many people have not heard of somebody with a much larger following than a smaller guy, but that happens a lot, it seems.
It does. I mean, it depends on what they're into, you know?
Yep, it does. All right, so you recently had Flint on your channel. I was watching that here in preparation for getting ready to chat. That was yes. Interesting.
Yeah, I like Flint. I follow him. When I contacted you to do this, I disagree with some of the things in your video talking about Flint and his, like, some of the things that you think he lied about or him losing the debate. So you and I have been discussing things like that. But I also have a lot of things that I agree with you on that I don't think enough people are speaking up on, because people are kind of honestly, and I can say this, you can call me a gaslighter all you want, but people I talk to feel a certain way about, sometimes academics can just be really jerks, and they can, if they think they have the winning argument, they can how do I want to explain this? Sometimes they can just get away with things, and then if they make a mistake, instead of just being like, yeah, I was wrong about that, they'll try to just double down and just say, you're the liar, or something like that. So I'll tell you an example of my own. Dan McClellan is a Bible scholar. He's a very, very popular Bible scholar, by the way. Very beloved Bible scholar. He's actually a pretty good dude. But I personally think there's some things some of the things that he claims to be he claims to have expertise on, he doesn't. So I made a video. I made a video pointing out some of the things that I saw, especially in his interview with Danny Jones. And I watched this interview he did with Danny Jones, and I just kept every 5 minutes something he would say that was just like, wait, that doesn't make sense. And I would go look up like what other experts are saying, and he's like, no, that's the exact opposite. He's actually one time him and I had a back and forth on Twitter. And he said something that was just like, I'm not going to get into the details, but he said something that I just thought was complete nonsense. And I, you know, responded to him, and he completely tried to gaslight me and say, no, you're misrepresenting the sources. And here's 5 books that are peer reviewed that say what I'm saying, and that's saying you're wrong. And I just remember thinking to myself, huh, let's check out these 5 books. Cause I don't think he thought that I was actually checking out the books. I think he just kind of just thought, oh, all right, expert, you got me. So I actually checked into this. I First book I pulled up that he listed, I opened it up, introduction, page one. It's saying the exact opposite of what he's saying. And it's actually alluding to the things that I was saying. It even mentions the same people I'm mentioning. So I respond right back. And I go, look, did you even read these books? Did you do it? Because I get it. I get it. You being an amateur and being like shut down by people with PhDs is annoying, because in this day and age, it takes a lot of training to get good methodology. And that's where I look up to experts in that side. But you can be in this day and age with the internet, with the tools at our disposal. Anybody can go online and they can read academic papers. That wasn't a thing 50 years ago.
That's absolutely right. When the Orion-Giza correlation first came out, Robert Bovall and the I imagine you're aware of it, but for the people that aren't, it's correlation between the three pyramids at Giza Plateau and the Orion, three stars in Orion's belt. And Robert Bovall first talked about this in the mid-80s, and it was met with skepticism. And one of the academic debunkings of it claimed that the constellation Leo wasn't what housed the sun during these summer solstice or the spring equinox during 10,500 BC. And that's actually incorrect, but you couldn't really fact check that back in the 90s unless you went to, you know, somebody who dealt in horoscopes or you were really, really good with astronomy, because there was no like book that was going to tell you what the sky was like 10,500 BC. And there was no website where you could just go click on it. So yeah, there was the debunkings back then could really fly off of the same thing that conspiracy theories could be built off back then, complete bullshit, because they didn't have a way to fact check it.
Yeah, you can get Greek tutors online now, or not just Greek, any language tutor online right now. You can, there's websites where you can actually like go through city by city and look through archaeology. Topos to archaeology is one of them, where you can actually like go from an ancient Greece and look, click on the cities, and like it'll tell you what are the sites there and all that. You can do a lot on the internet, and you can do, there's a lot of resources available to people in this day and age where amateurs can get very educated, you know. And I, like you and I both don't, we don't call ourselves experts. But like, the things that I really wanted to sort of lend my an olive branch to you, even though I disagree with your take on the debate, I disagree with the way Joe Rogan talked about it. I disagree with Graham Hancock on Flint being a liar. I don't think Flint's lying, but I do think there's things that we can criticize Flint on that are fair. Mm-hmm. And one of them was number one off the bat when he did a video saying, Dan doesn't even, you don't have any knowledge of archaeology. So why are you asking questions? Why are you answering questions on podcasts? I don't think you ever claim to be the expert. People just want to ask your opinion because you obviously are well read on the subject. I think that was unfair. And I felt a certain type of way about that because, you know, as another amateur who just, I'm very clear about this. I'm not an expert. I'm doing this because I love it. So you don't have to take my word for it. People ask me questions when I go live. What do you want me to say? I can't answer that because I'm not an expert. I just don't. It's not fun for anybody. We're on here having a good time. It's a community, right? So that was number one. Number two is the whole racist stuff. They're weaponizing not just racism, but like anti-Semitism, all types of misogyny that gets thrown in there. What any of the buzzwords that really get people to go, oh, bad. That gets weaponized. And I really, there was a clip from, I can't remember her name right now. It's Astra.
Yeah. Bad Astra. I've got,
that's one of the ones that like, really, when I heard that, I was like, that's correct. And I know who this, I've watched this person's content quite often. Brilliant scholar. I have nothing bad to say about it, but I just think that maybe she's getting like caught up and everyone else is saying it. So she's going to repeat it, but.
Points out how. Sorry about that.
I didn't know
that is the right one. I just added it to the thing and it just jumped straight to the stage. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I wanted to watch it anyway, but just wanted to say like, well, let's watch it first and talk about it.
Okay.
When it comes to disrupting the paradigm, points out how Graham is doing nothing new when it comes to disrupting the paradigm or whatever. He's just repackaging the work of Ignatius Donnelly, who also believed in Atlantis and white supremacy. Donnelly also promoted the theory of Atlanteans teaching indigenous cultures about architecture and civilizing them before a great flood came to wipe out the Atlanteans. who he also claimed were the origins of the Aryan race. Big yikes to that. Recently on this channel, we did a deep dive into a new Netflix series called Ancient Apocalypse, which is all about how Atlantis is real because no societies of color could have developed substantial architecture or astronomy. If you look back to the roots of this crazy Atlantis conspiracy theory, you see that it started in white supremacist, specifically Nazi circles.
All right, that's enough of that.
I thought that was such an unfair way to, like, first of all, off the rip, just to clarify, I don't find mostly anything Graham. I think Graham's asking cool questions, and I want to tag along and find out if it's true. I watched the show at Ancient Apocalypse. I'm not convinced about the about it. Like, I'm just not. It's just not like I haven't been convinced by any of that. I just, you know, it's just, and I'm not like, I'm just some guy, so yeah, it's not a big deal. I'm not gonna kill the. Who am I? I'm not gonna be the one that's gonna end Graham Hancock's career because like I can't do the guy. But like that is such an unfair. That's such a way to dismiss. And the reason why I felt such a certain type of way about it. That video that I was just telling you about when I criticized Dan McClellan, by the way, zero people have told me about anything that I said in that video that was wrong. It's like a 2.5 hour video. Zero. Dan never responded. All of his kind of his followers and friends, zero. I've gotten zero rebuttals about anything I said in that video, except I got called Nazi. I became a Nazi for making that video.
Yeah.
And by the way, the person who said it, the person who was like tagging or posting about it, me being a Nazi, was also posted on another Facebook post in that same group about Graham Hancock should be arrested. Did I send you this? Did I send you the screenshot of this?
You did. I'm pretty sure.
I wonder if I can pull it up.
It's on my phone, so I can't really pull it up on my computer. I don't have them attached.
I think I can get it right now, real quick, because this you got to see this.
Awesome. Yeah. Sorry.
It's insane. It's like people are losing their minds over what's really, I don't think, is that serious. Like, look, number one, I want to say this too. It's fair to point out that the Atlantis theory was held by people who were Nazis. That's a fair thing to point out.
Absolutely.
But then make it clear that not everyone who thinks and believes in Atlantis agrees with that, the Nazi Aryan stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it's like, I'm just saying, like, it's fair to be like, by the way, just so you know, a lot of the stuff Graham's pushing just happens to be some of the stuff that some of these Nazis are pushing. I just think that's kind of fair. As long as you separate who's being the Nazi and who's not, then people should be educated on the history of Atlantis. I think that's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No,
but I just thought the way the show was characterized there was like, I think I found it. Here it is. I found it. The way it was described was just like this show, the entire purpose of the show is to prove that Atlantis is real because only white people can do things. I watched the show. I've never got that impression.
Yeah. No, it's not. That's clearly not the point. But that's the thing where I would disagree strongly with you on the thing about Flint being dishonest. Obviously, we disagree on that.
Can get into that.
Yeah, but I think that one of the smoking guns for that is that he knows for a fact that what he said in the letter from the Society of American Archaeology to Netflix says that this theory dates to Ignatius Donnelly and his publication of these books. I held him to task on that on Twitter before he went to the debate. If you watch him in the debate, when he's talking to Joe Rogan, he doesn't say that it started with Ignatius Donnelly because he knows that he's already been called out on that. So he shifts to it started with some other guys, then he moves it and all the way up to Ignatius Donnelly. And
That's a fair point. Did he ever talk to you about this? Like in particular? No.
We talked about it a little bit when I first uploaded the video. I uploaded the video near Christmas time. So the video that first debunked their SAA letters position. And I gave that about a month because it was near Christmas time. So I figured, you know, I'll let people do their thing before they respond. I understand this is it's quite the chestnut here. And yeah. So I gave him a month, but after a month, I started pressing the issue a little bit. And Flint's answer was, well, do you see how in the SAA letter, we have the part that says comet? It's Graham said a comet and Ignatius Donnelly said a comet, but these other guys didn't say a comet. So we use that to differentiate. And that's where I was quick to point out, well, this astrophysicist, she sure didn't seem to catch the comet was differentiating anything. And that's the shit she works with. You would think that would stick out to her out of everything. And it's carefully worded to be underhanded. It has fuck all to do with battling racism and everything to do, like you said, to demonizing people. And that in and of itself is an underhanded, dishonest tactic.
So play this. I got a clip or whatever. Okay. It is. Yeah.
Yes.
This person right here, and nobody go out and do any do anything.
Be nice.
This is like, he should be in prison for fraud and misinformation campaign.
Yep.
What are we doing? We're trying to imprison people now? But this person right here has a history of being like this complete bully on the internet. Give you just a quick little rundown. Years ago, I did a video arguing against Richard Carrier and mythicism. This person helped me write like half of my script because this person was well versed in the history of mythicism, a lot of the opposing arguments. My whole part of that video that I wrote that was dear to me, that was all me, was about this particular Philo and his angel that this is going to make no sense to anybody. But anyways, let's just say it like this. The whole first almost half of the video was me. The last half, she helped me write most of that. When all of a sudden when the war started between the mythicist and myself, she was nowhere to be found. In fact, she was on the other side attacking me for my thumbnail or something in one of the videos. Like totally turned up on me. Anyways, we ended up becoming friends again after that because I was like, you know what? We don't have to be enemies online. This person has behind people's back, not just me, that's why I said people's back, behind my back and other creators' back, trying to send emails to other academics saying not to deal with me, he's a Nazi, he has Nazi friends, he's pushing all types of hateful rhetoric, the guests he has on are all Nazis. It's literally just trying to bully people because something's wrong with you, I think. But anyways, that's one of the things I notice about, there's a lot of that going on. And I'm here to like say, look, a lot of people are scared to talk about it. Yep. They're scared to like, it's racism is real. Bigotry is real. But like, if you're going to call everybody a bigot that you don't like, that real racism and bigotry is getting watered down with the stuff that's really not big racism and bigotry. So you're actually doing horrible damage to the world calling everyone a bigot and a racist because you don't like them. All of a sudden, the people who are really dealing with racism, getting fired from them jobs because they're, you know, the person who hired them just, you know, was right, whatever. Those people get pushed away, and all the stuff that gets pushed to the forefront is all these little, and then all of a sudden, nobody thinks racism is a thing anymore because it's so watered down.
And that's it tickles. I was just saying yesterday to Sam from Illegitimate Scholar that it allows people that would otherwise be like really into fighting racism, they've got an easy out. They can just go, I'll just go bitch about the guy that made Ancient Apocalypse and call him a racist. And now look, I've combated racism for the day. It's like, well, no, you've done nothing. You've affected nothing. You've changed nothing. And if you really do care, this is a solve for your feelings that you, if you really want to do it, it's sorry, buddy. It's a little bit tougher than that to fight those inherent societal issues. You can't just go bitch about the latest piece of media and be like, problem solved. You can't boycott a chicken sandwich or a singer or any of that shit and affect political change. I'm sorry. That doesn't work. You actually have to like roll up your sleeves and do stuff. So that doesn't work with TikTok meme culture. Those two are
everyone. It's all high-fiving each other. because I'm one of the good ones. Feel better about myself, you know. That's what it is. That's what's going on. But you know, so we agree on all that. We're meeting right there. We're making sure that that isn't. There's no question that that is nonsense. That needs to stop. Some of the stuff. Okay, so I was, you know, obviously the Graham Hancock was on Joe Rogan, and they talked about Flint lying. I don't think Flint necessarily was lying, but. Before I even get there, I forgot one more thing I wanted to mention. I forgot one more thing. Ever since the Graham Hancock debate with Flint Dibble, which, by the way, I watched that debate, and I thought Flint brought better arguments, and it wasn't that big of a – I didn't – like, the idea of winning and losing debates is so subjective anyway. So it's like – it's a debate. We're supposed to learn from it. It's supposed to be educational. The idea – for six, I don't know how long it's been since that debate happened. Is it about 6 months from now?
About 6 months, yeah.
For an entire 6 months since that debate, when I started following Flint Dibble that day when I watched Joe Rogan. I actually emailed him after that was over to get him on. That's how I got him on right after that. So for the entire 6 months since I've been following Flint Dibble, every single day, not just every single day, every hour. There's a new repost by Flynn Dibble about how he destroyed Graham Hancock in the debate every single day, sometimes 10 times a day. Every time I turn on my phone and go to X, Flynn Dibble reposting something, replying to himself, doing another thread about Graham Hancock. And then when Graham Hancock was quiet for a while, by the way, if you think you won the debate, you're supposed to be humble about it. Let other people talk for you. Don't just keep saying I won the debate. You can't. That's not how this works. This is like a story of hubris right here. Because when Graham came back to the internet, Graham didn't say anything for a while. Mm-hmm. When Graham returned with some things that he wanted to address, every time he posted on X, it was followed by spamming by Flint Dibble. Spamming. I'm blown away by it. I'm like, doesn't he have friends telling him not to do this?
Graham would share my videos, and Flint would ask Graham not to, and say, "Hey, Graham, you need to not share Dan's videos. He's harassing me." And then, but what you just said is going on. Like, Graham posts something, and Flint blows it up. Graham can't. A perfect example is, did you see what Flint said about Keanu Reeves when he first saw that he was looking for contact information for Keanu Reeves so that he could?
Yeah.
That's crazy. If I could spend 3 hours alone with him, I could convince him to like real archaeology more than that fake crap.
You have to correct everybody. Is that really what this is? Like some superhero?
Keanu Reeves has gone out of his way to hide his contact information because he's a fucking OG content creator. Before that was a term, that's what he was. He does not want somebody to email him because they don't like his video. He does not want that to happen. So he doesn't give you a way to email him if you don't like his video. So that's not good enough for Flint because
and it's not even just famous people. It's random.
If you contacted
random small accounts that post something about Graham Hancock, I don't know if he's like doing searches for Graham Hancock, but come on, stop biting that. My dog's biting something.
Oh, you're fine.
He responds with, "That's wrong. Here. Yep. Watch my debate with Graham Hancock. Watch how good I did in my debate. I'm like, well, dude, stop." I don't hate Flint or anything, but I'm just being honest with what I'm seeing. And one of the things that really got me going, come on, dude, really, is when you were trying to get educated by an expert, and you were doing this is a public facing archaeologist in the field who works on ice cores.
Not an archaeologist. He's actually an ice core specialist.
And you wanted to do what I do, and you go, and this is what I've been doing for years. I go straight to the sources and I ask them questions face to face. This is how I've been learning. I go, "Hey, what are your thoughts on this? I really want to know for my video or whatever." And I saw you're doing this too. "Hey, what's your thoughts on ice? What's the deal? What's the data? What's the this?" And then he had to jump in your conversation and tell that guy, "Be careful. This is what did he say? I forgot what he even said."
He said that I was a pseudoscientist that was using this to prove that there was ancient high technology.
Imagine if this was public. Imagine if you were out in public.
Well, let me, really quickly. He knows for a fact that I do not believe. He knew then that I do not believe in ancient high technology. He knew for a fact that I was not trying to prove metallurgy. He knew that. He dealt with me numerous times.
We had That's no bullying. So, no, sorry, Flint, but you did.
It was lying. He was lying about my position in order to scorch the earth. I'm not trying to like force my hand on this. It's just that the whole thing, to me, is critical about this, that Flint didn't get up there and make some mistakes. Flint didn't get up there and be like, oh, well, you know, I'm sorry, I accidentally said this. Flint does it over and over again. He twists the truth. When it comes to my video that said that he may have handled indigenous bones when he worked at Dartmouth University that were in violation of NAGPRA, he repeats this as me saying he did for a fact handle indigenous bones that were in violation of NAGPRA, to the point where if you look at the comment section of his video, it's full of people saying that he should take me to court for slander. But in reality, he lied about me saying that. And the whole fucking point was to show him how it feels when somebody says you may have done something horribly racist. Oh, you're not. I'm not saying you're racist, Flint. I'm just saying you might have handled these indigenous bones. And that just might be a terrible thing, but you might not have. I don't know. It's the same shit they do to Graham and all the rest of us. So that was the point. But Flint deliberately twists that into me saying point blank he did it. Sorry. He is not. He's not a good faith actor in this sphere. And the fact that he is doing victory lap after victory lap 6 months later is that's motive as to why he's doing, why he had no problem bullshitting his way through this. He had to win that debate. It's the only thing. He's got zero chance of getting tenure. Talk to any of his colleagues. He's not a well-loved archaeologist.
All right. Well, I get your point. but my thing about social media.
Fair.
Is it, if you're going to act to someone online, if you wouldn't do that, if you're going to talk to someone on X or on Messenger or something, and if that's not how you would act in public, you shouldn't do it that way. So if you're talking to an or a specialist in ice cores, let's say you went to their university and it was an open university and he was at his desk and you walked in there, doesn't matter what you believe in. And obviously you didn't believe in the stuff that he was claiming you believe. It didn't matter if you did. It does not matter. Mm-hmm. You went there to a public-facing scholar who's trying to teach the public, and you're trying to learn from the public-facing scholar. Imagine if someone barged in the room, pushed you off the side, and said, don't talk to him. He believes in something that we shouldn't believe in.
Yep.
That, to me, is nonsense.
Yeah, and the way that the ice core specialist handled it, the way that he rolled back his statements in public and
pressure
basically waffled. Well, it actually I said it before in a video, I have no problem questioning scientists, but I've always tried to keep it in the place where there's no real skin in the game. If I was to magically convince the entire planet that Atlantis was real and that mainstream archaeology was wrong, it would have really no effect on the trajectory of humanity. However, like if global warming's real and I am like, a man-made global warming is real, and I go and challenge a bunch of scientists and was to magically convince the world otherwise, I could really fuck the planet up. So I've always left that one all alone.
And but that's why we have peer review journals.
But this made me really question all of that, though, because here's a scientist that said things to me in private that as soon as he was pressured, flipped on a fucking dime, and he works in climate science. So it was like, it didn't change my position on anthropogenic climate change, but it did make me lift an eyebrow when I see that stuff all of a sudden.
It's unfortunate. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I agree with you, because I know for a fact, I have a handful of academics that I talk to on a regular basis who agreed with most of the stuff that I talked about when I criticized Bart Ehrman and Dan McClellan and a few others. But they can't say anything publicly. And yeah. And I get why they can't. And I don't blame them, because their career could be affected by it. They could be blacklisted. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I know for a fact that there's other academics who tell me that what I said was pretty much legit. And that sometimes a lot of these Bible scholars get so puffed up. Because they're really smart in one area. They know the Hebrew Bible really well. So therefore, they can just start talking about Homer They can start talking about Euripides. They can start talking about the Vedas. They can start, and they don't have no, they've never studied this stuff. They just did a quick search and they pulled up some papers and they just did a quick assessment of it. And that now it's in their video and you can just tell. Someone like me, who's not an expert, but who's immersed in these texts, I can tell, I can smell it from a mile away that you did not really study this stuff, that you just did a 5-minute search and you look for the best article you can find and just kind of just stuck it in there. I see it all the time.
Well, probably the best example that I'm sure you'll be very aware of, I'm a little old, but the best example to me was of the skeptics, the debunkers, grabbing something that was complete bullshit and running with it because it tickled their fancy, was that Zeitgeist series.
Yeah.
And where it just was like, oh yeah, Christianity is based on this Egyptian goddess and Easter and all the doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. It's just like, okay, well, you may as well be Doctor Who for all the fucking reality that you're portraying over here. But it got shared all over the skeptic circles
because it was a huge documentary. And it was complete nonsense.
Complete bullshit. I mean, yeah. A lot of skeptics were.
That wasn't academics that did that.
It got It got grabbed onto and shared in the same circles. And it was, some academics were shouting against it, but some academics were just retweeting it and resharing.
Not good ones, though.
Of course not. The debunkers, the ones that they're not in it to educate people. They're there to debunk ideas. It's really, I mean, honestly.
Well, no, to be fair, though, because I want to be like kind of, okay. If there's one thing about that documentary, the debunkers went for that one. Because I'll tell you, and they love that video. They love that documentary because then they can, if you even make an argument, because here's the thing about that. There are legitimate comparisons to make between Jesus, Dionysus, even Jesus and Horus. They're not the same. Sure. Jesus is not plagiarized. Yeah. There's no plagiarization happening. Jesus is Jesus. Horus is Horus. But there are legitimate arguments to draw parallels from these. For example, in Plutarch has a passage in a text that he wrote called On Isis and Osiris, where he says that the baby Horus was born around the time of the winter solstice. He doesn't say on December 25th.
Yeah.
He says around the time of the winter solstice. So there's some things you can pull from that. But here's the thing. If you do that, you know what the debunker type of academics do? They go, that's Zeitgeist. That's wrong. So it's funny that you brought that up. Because it's sort of the opposite in that sense. But I get your point. These things get tossed around. As long as it's something that helps the narrative, then it'll get pushed through a little easier. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Well, no, yeah, that's funny. It must have evolved quite a bit because I'm a less in the skeptic circles now than I was back in the late 2000s and the early 2010s, and that was when I remember it making the rounds, and that was when it was honestly kind of the beginning of when I saw memes and that whole thing starting to become politically weaponized. You would see these things that would show like people that were victims of police brutality or people that were the victims of gang violence or whatever. And they would always just be like, they'd have these names and how horrible it was. And you Google the information and it was just always being misrepresented. And I remember that was about the time I started just kind of unfollowing a lot of those groups. Cause it was the propaganda was getting to be a fever pitch. And I'm not a fan of that shit.
Oh, that was the mythicist war that I was in, was those type of people who, they're not following the data. They're trying to find whatever makes Christianity look bad or whatever makes Jesus look like he didn't exist. So they do this thing where it's like they're just trying to make the data fit whatever they want. Speaking of that, because you and I wanted to, our disagreements are on the debate, and I kind of want to get into that a little bit. But one more thing that you had a fair point on, and I just kind of came to this conclusion today as we were going back and forth, because I didn't think Flint really lied about anything in the debate. I still think he technically won the debate. Technically, it depends on what the debate's even on. Do they even say what the debate is on? Is it on ancient civilization? What's the topic of the debate? Did anyone ever say?
I think it was something like is Atlantis real or something like that?
So yeah, if Atlantis is real, then Flint won. If that's the topic of the debate, in my opinion, once again, it's subjective.
Yeah.
I can't measure. There's no points anywhere. But like you made a really strong point to me in the last couple of days, we were going back and forth. Cause I thought with the, there's a few things that you called them out on for lying. One of them was the ice cores thing. Mm-hmm. The other one was shipwrecks. And the big one was the agriculture out of use becoming feral. And I want to start with that third one because you made, I wasn't really aware until today when I looked at the evidence that you presented. And in the debate, he does, Joe Rogan just asked him a straight up question out of the blue. He says, well, how long does it take for crops to go feral? And he just looks at him straight up confidently, says thousands of years. Uh-huh. And then Joe says, how many thousands? And he goes, that I don't know. I have to look it up. And then he kind of presses him on a little bit and he would go, it'd be a long time. It was, and then he cited somebody. I can't remember who it was. Yep. He said, this guy wrote a paper on it. So that, and that's another way that can be a gaslighting technique right there. When you just mention someone's name and say there's a paper on it. So I think you have a good point. And so here's the thing that Flint should have did here, because it's just one little second of a three. How long was 4 hour debate?
3.5 hours. Yeah.
3.5. This is just 1 second out of a 4 hour debate. Flint could have said, yeah, I thought it was 1,000 years. I was wrong. Yep. You guys got me.
Yeah. It might not have been 1,000 years. I misspoke, but check.
He doubled down and then he called you a liar. And thank that you. To me, that I think, went, I think you have a point there.
Yeah. He in his video, he says that he's numerous times he has defended that and said, just like I said in the text to you, that he's saying that when he said it wasn't thousands of, he said thousands of years, and then he retracted it, and that's not what he did. Like you said,
he never did.
No, never he never did. Retracted.
Didn't look that way to me. And I remember watching it, and I remember specifically thinking about that all day, being like, "Huh, that's." I remember thinking to myself, Joe Rogan asked a really good question, and that helped. And I remember thinking to myself that question really helped Flint Dibble. And it made it seem like this is like way out. Like that was kind of a hard point right there.
Yep.
And it never came across to me that Flint said, hold on, never mind. I don't even know. It came off as if not 1,000 years, something close to it. That's what it came off like. It came off like, I don't know exactly, but probably 1,000 years. That's what it came off.
Like I said, the example I always use is if Joe would have asked him, hey, Flint, what is pi? And he would have said 3.14. And Joe would have said, well, what exactly is pi? I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. That doesn't take the 3.14 off the table. And that's exactly what Flint did. He left the thousands of years on the table, and he didn't retract it. All he did was say, I can't get more specific.
So this happened with Dan McClellan and the video that I covered him doing this in a podcast he was in, where he was refuting another friend of mine, Dr. Amon, who made a claim that Hebrew only has 9,000 words and Greek has 1.5 million. Turned out that he was actually correct. We're comparing unique word forms,
okay,
apples to apples. That's the case. If you're comparing another phrase called la mata, which means not unique word forms, but just like the stems of the words, then the Greek goes down to 250,000 and the Hebrew kind of slides down a little bit, but like the Hebrew doesn't have as many unique word forms. Anyways, long story short, Dan McClellan said he gave an exact number to the tenth. So he said Hebrew has, I think, 9,986 words in the lexicon. He didn't round any, he didn't guess. He didn't say, I think around 9,000. He mm-hmm. said an exact number to the tenth, 9,986 words. Then very next day, the video wasn't even released yet. They recorded it. The very next day, he jumps on social media and going and says, hey, everybody, I realized that I made a mistake yesterday. Amon is actually correct. There only is he said 90,000.
Okay.
He went up 10 times that. I'm sorry. I made that mistake. So he said 90,986. The very next day, he jumps on social media and says, correction, everyone. I was wrong. Amon is right. It is about 9,000. He goes, I rounded up and got the decimal wrong. So nobody saw the video. And everyone was like, hey, that's cool. This dude just owned up to his mistake. But then when the video came out, because he says in that post, he says later in that post, I knew that I was wrong and I leaned into it, but it turned out that I was, he goes, he turned out, thought that I was off by the decimal. So if he was off by a decimal, that would mean he rounded and said 90,000. But then when we watched the clip, he gave an exact number.
Yeah.
So you didn't round up you didn't get the decimal off. You guessed, you gave an exact number and you were wrong. So instead of just being like, I was wrong, I just found out that I was wrong, you got this. He had to make it appear that he knew the correct answer and just got the decimal wrong.
There's that dynamic of human interaction, of conversation, where people just kind of knee-jerk and give you a bullshit answer to make it sound like they know what they're talking about, is something that used to fly because your words were not immortalized. Now your words are immortalized and everybody can see them and pick them apart. And
yeah,
that the people that like to do things like that, they're having a tough run of things right now.
Yeah. And he could have just, and look, let's get off Dan for a second. Go back to Flint.
Sure.
Flint could have just said, he asked me, I thought it was 1,000. I honestly thought it was a long time. It was my impression that it was, I don't actually think he lied on the spot. You might think he lied on the spot. I don't. Okay. I think the problem was he wanted to make it seem like he never got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just say you got it wrong. We're not all knowing. It doesn't look bad for an expert who's a professor to get one thing wrong in a 3.5 hour debate.
That's true.
And this is what I think happened. Let me clarify this. Yep, I don't think he lied. I think he got it wrong. I think he actually thought that it was maybe 1,000 years. And then when he realized he was wrong, he just was like, well, I don't want to be wrong. I want to be right somehow. And then he leaned into it.
Yeah, I can go with that. But there's a number of other things. Like one of the things that I brought up in the five lies video, and it's the least spoken of because it has basically nothing to do with the actual debate at hand. But it does prove the way that he's willing to bend the truth in order to make his case. He told Joe that the pyramids at Giza are dated through carbon dating, and they are not. They are not dated through carbon dating one bit. We have carbon dating that has come in after the written records, and the carbon dating did not affect the dating of the pyramids at all because the written records are considered to be more robust for whatever reason. And Flint didn't tell Joe that, and that's not a big deal because it's only a few hundred years. So if you're talking like a difference between a 10,000 year old pyramid and a 6,000 year old pyramid and a 3,000 year old pyramid, that really doesn't matter. But it does matter in the fact that it represents there's a fucking massive, massive difference between the hard data of carbon 14 dating and, well, some guy wrote it on a stela 4,000 years ago, and we're reading it now, and this is what we believe. But that's what he told Joe. And even at the very beginning of the video, when I show the graph that he used from, he's talking about a Roman place. He's talking about the Ice Age and showing a graph from the Roman times. It's perhaps that's not an open lie, but it's extremely disingenuous. Like me show the example I always use for that is if I show you a picture of a gourmet hamburger and say, let's go to McDonald's. I'm not saying that this is what you're going to get there, but I'm kind of misleading you. If this is what I'm showing when I say let's go to McDonald's, it's him and John Hoops both are very careful to try to put themselves in a position where they can claim that they didn't openly lie. But it's this stuff is extremely carefully worded and extremely Flint's not good at not knee jerking his way into it. Watch the part when they start holding him to task on the racism thing. Did you say that? Yes, I did say that. Well, no, I didn't say that. Well, yeah, I did say that. Well, no, I didn't. And it's literally the same statement. Well, did you say that? Well, no, it's not in quotation marks. It's not actually in quotation marks. What the fuck does that mean? Did you say it or not?
Because I still am not clear. When I was told different things about this, on the screen was some pretty rough things about Graham. Was that Flint's words or no? I still don't know. Yes,
those were Flint's words.
Okay.
Those were Flint's words.
It's unfortunate. So he was trying to say it wasn't his words, though.
Well, he was trying to say they weren't his words, and he was trying to say they were his words at the exact same time. And that's what I mean by it shows that, what you said, he might not have, like, there's no question that he did not contemplate the question about how long it takes a plant to revert to a feral state, but he knee-jerked a lie. And then he doubled down on it and continued to double down on it. And this was the same thing with the racism thing. He didn't expect Joe to just drive into it like that. Because I'm assuming that his circle does not, you know, he hasn't experienced that in his community. So when Joe turns around, he's like, what in the fuck are you doing? Well, but I didn't say that. Did you say that? Well, that's not in quotation marks. Well, yeah, but it wasn't the other one. Oh yeah. Well,
That was a rough part to watch.
Well, yeah, it's because he's got his can caught in the cookie jar. And he's trying as quickly. If you watch him at one part, Graham tries to just like to drive the conversation away from that back to something that he can, you know, control, back to a part of the conversation that he can dominate and dictate by just galloping his opponents and basically, look, I'm an authority. I know what I'm talking about here. And then they don't challenge it. A great psychological tell, honestly, to show that he was misleading at times. When they're talking about Sacsayhuaman and Jamie's bringing up slides, at one point Flint says, yeah, I'm not really sure if that's Sacsayhuaman or not. I don't know. That could be a slide of anything. Well, he's the only one that said that. Why the fuck would he say that? Because he's doing that. He's the only one who's thinking that way. Everybody else is thinking we're all playing above the board here. He recognizes cheating is something that's going on at that table. What respect I had for him was completely lost when I watched that debate and started digging into it. It's like this guy would, I have no question in my mind that he wasn't just making mistakes in line. And if he was, he had every chance to go, and he's been on at least a dozen streams since then. Every single time he says the same thing. The worst I did was get the shipwreck thing wrong. No bullshit. You lied about the racism thing. That's the worst, in my opinion.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm hearing you out, and I think there's some fair points being made. It's still not clear if he lied on the spot to win the debate, but I do think I think these things he's getting wrong, and he's just trying to like make it seem like it's not that. Like the other one that that Graham opened up on in his video was the 3 million boat shipwrecks thing. That's the one, right? He said it was 3 million that were mapped, and it turned out there was 250,000 that were mapped.
Yeah.
To me, I don't think this was a strong lie per se, because he did cite a UNESCO estimation.
Yeah.
So it's like he's just kind of reading the.
But no, it just to compare it to what you had just said a minute ago about your friend. Give me one second to address the super chats really quick.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting.
Sorry, Bubblegum.
Yeah.
Even if Atlantis isn't real, the Babylonian global flood is undeniable. The walls of the Grand Canyon is a colossal sediment deposit of a colossal flood. There's a lot of people that believe that. I'm not sure on that one, to be honest with you.
I'm not a geologist, so I can't be an authoritative answer to that. But from the experts I've listened to, by the way. Actually I can be authoritative on that. And we all can. It's basic math. There is not enough water on the planet that if we melted all the ice sheets in the world, there still wouldn't be enough water to cover all the landmass.
Yeah.
So that's impossible. That's already out of that by that.
And Jason Muse says that Dibs tried to control the narrative on Danny Jones too. Yeah, that was hard to watch, but it was nice because Danny pushed back on him pretty hard.
He did. Yep. And I thought that was a really good. I thought me personally. This is not a disagreement we have.
Yep.
I thought Flint had a good performance on Danny Jones.
Yeah, it was okay at times, but the condescending part of it does more damage than I think he knows. When he laughs, at
I the agree. Bases,
when he's just like laughs at the bases, it's like you just lost fucking 80%.
Yeah, the you're right. The hubris, the cock, the laughing at people, that is so nonsense, and that's that comes off so unappealing. It just does.
Yeah,
like there's better ways to be critical of things that like you could just be take it serious. Mm-hmm. People are taking it serious, so take it serious. This is why you have this people, you have this massive people against you on the internet.
Yep.
Because it's because of how you're
being an asshole about it.
Yep. Yeah.
Return to what you said there about the shipwrecks and it being a mistake. I'll compare it to what you said earlier about the guy and the number of Hebrew words. Flint didn't say there's 3 million estimated shipwrecks. He didn't say UNESCO says there's 3 million shipwrecks. He said 3 million mapped.
Mapped. I know.
That's a huge difference. That's a distinction.
I agree. He got it wrong. That's a fact. We both agree there.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that he was I don't think that would be a good I don't think he I think he read that wrong and it came out that way. I don't think he lied on purpose.
That may well be the case, but it doesn't look good. And it does also, he said things like the length of time that a ship is underwater doesn't matter as to how much it deteriorates, right? I mean, this is patently false. This is like the first thing, if you look up underwater archaeologists, the very first thing they're going to say is the first thing to concern yourself with is how long it's been underwater. Now, there are factors that will mitigate this, and there are extreme factors that will completely, like being at the bottom of the Dead Sea. Yeah, exactly. But
right now, we don't have the technology to go down there right now because of how the pressure.
Yeah.
But right now, in the bottom of the Black Sea, there are some wonders down there. And one day, if we can figure out how to get down there, we're going to find something. It might help Grant Hancock out. We just don't know.
Exactly. But it is a big deal as far as when he says things like we don't know how long it doesn't matter how long something's underwater for it to be preserved. And making it sound like, I mean, that's a huge thing right there. He's making it sound like we should have shipwrecks from this civilization when he knows. If he's done his research, he should know that we don't have any shipwrecks from that time. But we do know that it's commonly accepted that people were using boats to travel all over the world at that point. All over the world.
How did they get to Crete and the Stone Age?
All over Southeast Asia, all over Oceania. All over that part of the world. They're scattered all over. And humans have been scattered all over there for hundreds of thousands of years. You know, Java and stuff was like 300,000 years ago or some shit. So, and Flint knows there's none of these boats exist, but he says, quote, to him, that's a big problem that none of Graham's boats exist. That's a big problem. This is the kind of thing that it's very, you know, it's dishonest as hell.
I think the point there is that the advancements, the advancement of the ships sort of come, they seem to go in a linear direction. They seem to get more advanced from the onset of when we find the oldest shipwrecks towards when we get to the Phoenician triremes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a pattern. It doesn't seem to be like, oh, look at this one from this one looks way better than this. There seems to be like a gradient scale there. But I think that's what it is.
You know, when we get to a point where it's gone, and that's where there is right. there is no great, and that's the time of where Hancock's talking about. So
sure,
you know, that's where it doesn't. I mean, ultimately,
Occam's razor just deals with that. Like
but Occam's razor doesn't debunk it.
It doesn't, and so
Flint didn't employ Occam's razor. Flint employed a secure 100%. We have no shipwrecks from this time, even though Occam's razor. I wouldn't have complained if I say it all the time. We need good, honest skeptics. If we don't, if you have dreamers running amok by themselves, they just come up with all kinds of crazy ideas, and they need skeptics to put them back on the trail. The skeptics, you leave them to themselves. They tend to not innovate very much. They tend to just like to stick to the path. You need the two together. But if you have cynics in the place of skeptics, you end up with a divide like the one we see here. So
yeah,
I don't begrudge Flint from going on and trying to debunk these ideas. I begrudge Flint from trying to do it in a way where it was a zero-sum game. I'm going to win and do victory laps when this is all said and done, instead of sit down and actually educate people, because he bullshit to the point where the ice core thing, he actually is misrepresenting ice core, the way ice core data is read to the public still to this day in order to defend himself.
Before we get onto the ice core sheet, I just want to ask you one more thing about the shipwrecks. Did he ever explain that he got that wrong? I never found anything that he said about that.
He said on one thing, he did say at least once, it's the only thing he'll admit, that he made a mistake.
He made a mistake. And that's you got to respect that. Yeah. I think.
Well, that would be fine. Except for it was the way it's couched is very much. I will say it's the only mistake that I made. The only thing that they got right is that I did miss this. That's fine, but it's
fair.
I would disagree with that, especially about when it comes to the racism thing. But
oh yeah,
at any rate.
So all right, the other one was the ice core thing. That's the one that you were talking about.
Yes.
So what happened there? It sounded like to me that he was getting it wrong. Like, it's another example of me. I don't think he was lying, but he got it wrong.
Well, it's the lie in and of itself wasn't the way that he presented it at first. It was necessarily. There was a couple of things about it that were dishonest. One was the graph that he used. He used a graph on the screen that was from Roman times, and he's discussing, you know, ice cores or the amount of lead in the atmosphere thousands of years before that. So that, again, like I said earlier, it's misleading. It's kind of a shell game. But what's more important is that he says that we track the amount of lead in the ice cores, and this is how we know whether or not, you know, there was large scale metallurgy going on. And he doesn't mention that there was ice, that there's spikes in lead throughout the history of the ice cores, right? You go back tens of thousands of years and the spikes in lead over and over again, they correspond with periods of lower or of higher glaciation. So there's more land exposed and more dust is blown, and there's so more metal ends up on the ice cores. That's the hypothesis. But the thing is, if you look into it, the way that they determine whether or not lead is from an anthropogenic origin or from a natural origin, right? Whether people made it or whether this lead just popped up magically or by the dust being blown there naturally, they determine that based on isotopic signatures and archaeological sites. So if they have no archaeological site that corresponds to the lead and the isotopes that they find in the ice core, they will assume that that spike in lead came from a natural source, unless there's something in the isotopes that proves that it was like more modern stuff. You'll get some goofy isotopes, right? We do goofy shit now compared to the back of the day. But when they dug in the dirt, the difference, let's put it this way, the difference between the topsoil that's blown off of the ground and settles on the ice cores, settles on the ice and becomes lead in the ice sediment thousands of years later, there's no difference between it being blown by the wind or being dug up by human hands in their search for metal. That's the same dust being blown. It lands on the same ice through the same jet streams. The only difference is if they don't have an archaeological site, they'll assume that it was natural. If they do have an archaeological site, they'll assume it's man-made. Real simple. And when they don't have an archaeological site because it's 10,000 plus years ago, they assume it's man-made, but it's not a very, or they, excuse me, they assume it's natural, but it's not a very good bit of evidence because, well, we can tell that, again, we do see spikes in the lead, and it very well could have come from here. Now, I don't think it was metallurgy back then. Graham doesn't think it was metallurgy back then, but the way Flint presented that case was basically misrepresenting the science. Like, we can tell if this lead came from metallurgy or not, period, end of story.
Yeah. I think that was one of the more, I mean, I guess you make a good point. It sounds like to me like he just didn't, I think he's misreading it or not understanding. Like, I think he's more focused on that the data doesn't represent a civilization than he is about getting it exactly on, which is still a problem and should be corrected. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, I think he's taking the data and going, well, the data doesn't show there's a civilization here. So, all right, here it is. And then he's like kind of missing some of the steps in the way.
Well, if
missing the nuances, that's what I meant to say, the nuances.
If he said the data doesn't show there's a civilization there, I wouldn't take issue with that. He says, we can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was no large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age. And it's like, well, no,
actually. That's a definitive statement. I don't think anyone should ever make those.
No, he should. He shouldn't make those. Yeah. Real quick, let me address these ones real quick. Maniac March, I love how you guys are both willing to consider many different points of view. Both are modern-day Socrates. Much love. Socrates. Yeah, I
know. Oh, okay.
Thank you, Maniac March. And we've got Zyzo Cryptic here saying, I wish we could stop talking about Flint Double. Oh, we will eventually.
That's my fault. It wasn't your idea.
You're just fine.
I'm fascinated by this because I have some personal, I've had similar things happen with me and my channel where academics can be, it's my word versus the amateur, and everyone's just, they have the power to like sort of control the narrative and gaslight. And so when I see it happening to someone else, I really want to like make sure that I get my voice out and say, look, they're not all knowing people, and amateurs can from time to time correct an expert. It does happen. So,
yeah. Well, thanks. It really is sad because I got along well, not with just with Flint, but with most of the archaeologists on Twitter and stuff, up until I did the video that was trying to show them that their SAA letter was misinformed. After that, we started butting heads, because I'm not a fan of people that, you know, call themselves scientists running with a narrative when it's been proven to be wrong for some reason. But when the Graham Hancock Flint Dibble debate happened, after I started calling Flint out on that, it was, you know, there's it does it, I have like you, I'm assuming, I have some scientists that email me. They don't want to talk to me in public, like you were alluding to earlier, but they will talk to me, right? And it's sad. It's like these people are afraid to stick their neck out there and actually course correct their field of study. Because
it makes you wonder what the discourse would be like if everyone was honest about what they feel about the situation.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to just, SSA came along and wrote a letter. Whoa, I'm not getting involved in this. I don't want to be on that side. I don't want to look like a lunatic.
Well, yeah, that's just it. Well, and that's one of the biggest reasons you hammer away at that freaking white supremacy. They hammer away at the white supremacy thing, because that is a perfect way to keep somebody clean the fuck off the other side.
Right.
It's like, I mean, that one right there, that just turns it radioactive. It's like you really do. Only a Nazi would support a Nazi. Why?
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just going to go back to looking at dick bones and seeds. Right.
Yeah, that's really it. Go ahead and read this, and I want to ask you what the
This is Cliff. He's always giving me shit about this sign. Thanks for the discussion, you two. Having fun reading the chat. You'll never get my sign, Cliff. I've got a sign that says the Presidential Commission for Nuclear Disasters or something like that. And it's like a real one. So he's always trying to get it. But all right, go ahead.
So this was a big deal. The SAA wrote this letter to Netflix. And what was they trying to go? They're trying to get them to stop filming?
No, they wanted them to rebrand it as a science fiction instead of a documentary series. So that way, and
Why don't they just start labeling theirs as science document, or, you know, whatever. A documentary can be wide ranging. I make documentaries, and I'm not getting it peer reviewed or anything. I'm just
they're bristling. It's the same reason that it's hard to explain. They're so hell bent on this winning this discussion. The way that they reacted to the Keanu Reeves thing, it's not because Keanu Reeves was on Ancient Apocalypse and he's a celebrity. He's fucking Keanu Reeves. I mean, you're not going to find a more loved celebrity on the internet. And these guys, John Hoops and Flint Dibble, they spend 16 hours a day on social media. If they're well aware of one thing.
Yeah, that's not on. Look, Flint, if you ever watch this, I like you, dude. I really do. I'm still following you, but take a break from the internet. Honestly, you don't have to take my advice, but it does not look normal. Okay, whatever. But there's a lot of archaeologists that do kind of handle it in a different way, where they certainly don't agree with anything, almost anything Graham says, but they're polite with them. They'll talk to them. What was the guy who was recent? He was actually on the show. South American guy.
But Ed Barnhart?
Ed Barnhart, yeah. He works, or he focuses on South American archaeology, right?
Yeah.
Or Mexico?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. I think the way he maneuvered everything was he all the questions that Graham's asking, he's not going,
exactly.
What did you say? He's actually going, yeah, I never thought about that. I don't really know. There's not much evidence. If it was true, this would be the case. This would need to happen. He's sort of helping him out. He's educating him and just taking it serious. That's all. I think that's all anyone has to do. It's very simple.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Like I've talked about this before. Carl Sagan really like showed us the mold here, the path. He would get asked about aliens all the time, and he didn't scoff. He didn't laugh. He, even though the odds of little green men visiting the Earth are slim to none, and he's very quick to acknowledge that and very quick to reiterate that, he would entertain. What kind of technology do you think the aliens on Alpha Centauri would have? well, the odds of them actually reaching here are really slim. But, you know, that star has been around for about a billion years longer than ours. So assuming a civilization has been dot, 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 and then he runs with it and tickles the imagination of the interested amateur so that they turn around and go to the library and get a book and go home and read. Instead right. of telling them there is nothing to fucking see here, fuck you, you fucking moron, LOL.
And you're a racist.
Yeah, by the way, you're a racist. Go say a thousand Hail Marys. And it was like, come on, man.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly right.
And then they cry. How come it is that people like fake archaeology more than real archaeology? Is because we've got Graham Hancock and Keanu Reeves versus Flint Dibble and John Hoops. Fucking, I don't know. You tell me.
Well, that's another thing. That's another aspect of this. There's something powerful about the idea that there was an ancient civilization that had everything figured out and that they mapped the world, they mapped the stars, they encoded things. That's always going to be very enticing for people. I remember years ago, I want to say 2007, I watched a documentary. I was in high school. I was smoking up, you know, in my friend's house. We watched this documentary called The Revelation of the Pyramids. And it blew my mind. They had this whole thing where all the pyramids in the world are all on one line across the planet. And I remember watching at the very end of the documentary, they're like, here's the first pyramid. And they're showing the earth going around. And they're like, there's a red line going across the earth. And it's like, there's the next one. There's the next one. And it connects all the way across. I remember being like, whoa. And that kind of like, it was fun to watch. And then it turned out that there was like some of the stuff they got wrong. I don't know. I don't even know what I haven't seen that documentary in a while. I heard someone told me that the person who made that documentary was interviewing archaeologists, and then they were clipping them in the wrong way out of context to make the, that's what I heard. There was something like that going on. Can't confirm or deny. I was told that by somebody. But it was a fun documentary, and I can see why people are enticed by this. So at the end of the day, someone like Graham Hancock is kind of just giving edutainment, entertainment, like Ancient Aliens. I'm not saying he's Ancient Aliens, but Ancient Aliens is like this, where they're like, hey, we're going to go around, and we're going to go to Peru, or we're going to go to the Nazca Lines, we're going to go look over here, and maybe it was aliens. And it's like, it's not really hurting anybody. And no. It's not like he's saying I should be peer reviewed. Everyone should be following this. I do though, and I'm talking about Ancient Aliens in that sense. Mm-hmm. I do think Graham can be a little sensitive when people push back, mm-hmm. and he can get a little angry at people. And he goes a little far with thinking that there's some conspiracy. I'm not saying he thinks there's like it almost comes off the way he is complaining a lot about it, where he's like, all these people are trying to shut me down. And it's, in a sense, he's right, because we talked about it. You know, a lot of the racist stuff, yeah, I agree with him.
Well, it's not
but a lot of it is just legitimate scholars saying this stuff is just not.
Yeah, I'm no, not and that's, then that's honestly, that's when I first started making videos, I thought that was the case, that Graham was overreacting to the critics. Yeah, I figured that, you know, like Milo Rossi was Stefan Milo in my first video I responded to. And Milo Rossi's, you know,
that was a great video.
You know, oh, thank you. He's a smart ass, right? He's a smart ass kid. And there's nothing
wrong. I thought his video was great too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's good at what he does. There's a reason he's got a big channel. I thought that, you know, that Graham was misinterpreting, you know, that internet snark for content creating purposes. I thought maybe he was misinterpreting that as, you know, actual vitriol. But, you know, you start scratching the surface of this, and it's not just the racism thing. I mean, they contact Serpent Mound and make sure that the people that are in charge of that place don't let him film there. What was the other place that he couldn't film here recently? I forget what it was, but
Isn't he kind of like Göbekli Tepe?
No, not that I'm aware of, but Cahokia Mound. They wouldn't let him film at Cahokia Mound this year for our Ancient Apocalypse season 2. And these are, you know, these are sites in America that are public sites. I mean, just in order to film for commercial purposes, you're going to, you know, there's state parks and whatnot. You're going to have to like throw some money at it. But generally speaking, they don't reject anybody unless they're like way over the top. But we saw it with Flint, we saw what the way Flint handled me talking to the ice core specialist and when Graham was talking to Keanu Reeves. These guys will go behind backs to scorch earth to make sure that, and so it, at the end of the day, Graham ends up where he can't talk to certain people, because if he talks to them, they've already been told by Flint Dibble and John Hoops and a bunch of other guys that this guy's a neo-Nazi supporter, or, you know, his words support neo-Nazism or whatever the fuck bullshit slant they put on it, and how terrible he is. And so therefore, he ends up with a bunch of people that don't want to deal with him before it even starts. And so when he says there's a conspiracy by archaeology, like, it's one of the things that I said when I first started complaining about the SAA letter, when I said, I've got proof that what you're saying about the origins of Atlantis is wrong. You do realize this allows for the factually correct statement. Archaeologists are lying about Atlantis. That's a factually correct statement that I can say, because you guys are lying to Netflix about the origins of Atlantis.
And just in case anyone's not understanding what you mean by that, you're saying that the first person to theorize that Atlantis is real was not an Aryan Nazi?
Yes, and that's in the modern day. I mean, you know, Atlantis obviously goes back to Plato, but
right.
Yeah, they were, say, Ignatius Donnelly. Ignatius Donnelly was the first person to do this in the modern era, and the first two people were Charles Étienne Brasier de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Plagnon, and they were both about 20 to 30 years before Donnelly. They both believed the Maya were the origins of civilization, the conquerors of the world. One of them says that he laughs at the idea that the Aryans were first. The other guy believes that the Mayas conquered India even. And one thing worth mentioning here, that they completely, you probably are aware of, like, the old school biblical races that people used to believe in.
Yeah, the Shem, Noah, or Shem, Japheth, and Ham.
Okay, so just really quickly off.
And it's not that ancient, by the way. It's from 300 BC.
Exactly. And but if you go back, in the 1800s, this was believed to be the case. This was believed to be the way races were. So if the origins of the races came from Noah, that was after the flood, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so before the flood, if Atlantis existed before the flood, could it have been Aryan Atlantis?
Because it couldn't, because it'd be before the three races.
Before, thank you. So yeah, the whole idea that these guys believed in an Aryan Atlantis is a fucking lie that's conjured up by these guys in order to demonize it. These guys didn't believe in Aryans before the Great Flood. Yes, there is people that believe that crap in the Nazi days, but Ignatius Donnelly, he didn't even believe in Aryans before the flood. It's like they prey on that ignorance. They prey.
Yeah, I got this old book about Egypt called Life in Ancient Egypt by Adolf. Or, by the way, if you know a guy named Adolf, you know it's old.
Yes,
but it's very dated, and it's got a lot of that biblical stuff going on. Like, they're still sucked into that dogma. It's a pretty decent book for the time period, but yeah, you can tell it's dated. But that's a good point what you just said. So that's a solid point. I have to look into that more. Another thing I wanted to ask you about that in particular. How far before all the Nazi stuff was that?
Well, that was like 1880s, so, you know, 70 years, 60 years, 50 years before it really kicked off. But yeah.
So there was a little, so what you're saying is there was a little spot in time where people were getting into Atlantis and it wasn't just about a master white race.
No. Yeah. It's the master white race thing has always been an offshoot. There's always been people that have grabbed it and ran with it, but there's always been people that racists steal everything. And that's really, I mean, when your ideology is consistently slapped down, why did they steal Pepe the Frog 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Because they can't go post a swastika. They can't. So since they can't post their ideological symbol, they go hijack the moon man from fucking McDonald's commercials, which, yes, if you remember those old Mac Tonight commercials from, well, I'm older than you, but yeah, this commercials from this moon headed mascot for McDonald's. And
I've seen it before.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Racists hijack that shit because
it does
now, but it didn't get slapped down by the powers that be for a while. And so they end up doing that because they're always playing reverse whack-a-mole with the powers that be, right? They get on Facebook, they can say this today, 2 days later, it's flagged for racism, so they got to say something different.
Right.
So they're always shifting things, and they've always done this with ideological talking points, too. They'll grab on to, like, a very popular one nowadays would be statistics. You will find racists that will grab statistics and throw them around without looking at any of the underlying social issues. They'll just say purely, this is X. And so that doesn't mean statistics are racist, but that does mean that racists tend to like statistics. And so you could say that about anything. You could say that about Atlantis. You could say that. I mean, one of my favorite arguments for this is Susan B. Anthony. This is also, you have to look at the time that this stuff happened. When Susan B. Anthony and Ignatius Donnelly were both abolitionists, okay? They were both anti-slavery. But Susan B. Anthony said, when she was advocating for women's vote, that something about she would rather have her arm cut off before black people got the right to vote before white women did.
Yeah.
So it's like this, just because a figurehead made an argument for women voting that was racist, that doesn't make women voting inherently racist or potentially supporting racism. That's a bullshit red herring. It's the kind of thing, to the point where the Anti-Defamation League doesn't have one mention of Atlantis in their database for a reason. It's a nothing burger. They know it.
You know, it reminds me of Margaret Sanger, who found Planned Parenthood. And she was like this raging racist, and her whole reason for doing it was to so that black people can't have as many kids anymore. They can control the amount of kids that are having. So now you can honestly make that argument for people who are pro-abortion and go, are you also pro Margaret Sanger? She's the one who founded Planned Parenthood. And yep. It's like, whoa, I didn't go all the way over there. I'm just saying that people should be able to have abortions.
Yeah,
it's kind of the same thing.
No, I'm not aware of the history of that, but assuming that's true, then yes, it would be very much the same thing. It's you can't. There are certain things in this world, like a great example of this, with one that I another one that I'd love to hammer at. It's just kind of stupid, but you know, Hitler was really good at building roads. You look at the Autobahn, and he was very critical about. He wanted that thing to be like he wanted it to last a long time, and it did. Yeah. So, is good road building? Is that why your city streets are all fucked and have to be rebuilt every 2 years because the city doesn't want to be a Nazi? I mean, it's good road building has nothing to do with it. You could always find something.
Or don't drive an Audi because that's a German car, you know? So you can, I agree with you on that. I don't think you have to necessarily, because the theory was held by certain people and the people holding it today are all of a sudden doing the same thing. Now, it is a fair point that people bring up when they go to, when they say, like, look, the pyramids are, or not even just the pyramids, just any of these megalithic structures, that there's a history. We have the sources. The primary sources reflect that it was in this time by this king, and these indigenous people are, it's like, this is our thing. We did this. And people come along and go, no, it actually was someone else. I can see why someone would bring that up and say, look, easy on that. Like, you're trying to, like, you could see how somebody might take Graham Hancock's work and run with it in a different direction. Not saying that means it's Graham's fault, but I do think there's something to be said there in that discussion. That's all.
I have no problem with that. Yeah, again, like, here's the thing. There are guys, like, I always get bitched at every time I say it, but I have no problem saying it. Robert Zephyr is one that's... His content is he does the Aryan First Atlantis.
Oh yeah,
he's the DNA separation of races and all that shit. And that's, you know, that's where I would say, okay, if you guys were going after him, that'd be fine. But they don't. They don't go.
And he calls his channel Atlantean Gardens.
Yes.
So it's like, there you go. Now you have your boogeyman. Go after him. Not, you know, because Graham is really not in the same vein as Robert Zephyr is.
No,
and they're not even close.
Like I mentioned in my last video, you can't, if your intention is to demonize Graham and conflate him with racism, then you can't. If your intention is to demonize Graham and conflate him with racism, you can't very well hold up a guy like Robert Zephyr next to him, because really quickly you're going to see that Graham's not racist.
Good point.
You have to just pretend that Robert Zephyr is is one of many of the masses of red-hatted followers of Graham Hancock, right? It's they got to twist it all into this whole political thing.
Now, yeah, and like Robert Seffer he tries to play the same victim card that Graham sort of is doing, but there's no sympathy for me on that guy. That guy's his content speaks for itself. He's always trying to say Lucy didn't happen. We didn't come from Africa. There was underground caves where white people are from, and we're not even the same as Africans. That's a whole different race. Like, he's so hardcore. Whereas there is a clear example. There is no gray area. We don't have to guess. Does Graham really believe this? No. It's like Robert Seffer tells you with his content what he believes.
Yep.
And so if people want to do the campaigns against him that they're trying to do with Graham, you're not going to see me defending Robert Seffer.
No.
So, no,
but sadly, and I know that, like, you know, Gutsick Gibbons, sadly, like,
she took him down on a couple of things. Yeah.
But,
and it was a good video.
It was, but it was also sadly, in my opinion, even though it was a good video, I do think that it fell for the same mistake that Flint's stuff does. It's preaching to the choir. She in the first 5 minutes alienated every single one of his followers that might have clicked on that. So she was preaching to nobody but the choir after five.
I agree.
She flamed the fuck out of him right out the gate. She just blasted him. That motherfucking racist piece of shit. just come right out. Real quickly, I should address this here really. Cornette and Joel, I know I'm saying that wrong. Sorry. Atlantis is brought into modern academia by Olaf Red Book Lewis in 1677, not by the Americans in the 1800s. Yes, I am aware that there was there's a few arguments like that to be made, but it really didn't seem to, like, the idea of hyperdiffusionism, that's one culture spreading its influence around the globe and sticking into modern culture and becoming the steady thread. Basically, you can trace a steady thread of books, of ideas, all the way back to Charles Etienne Brasier de Bourbourg, but they try to cut that off at Ignatius Donnelly when they're making their racist case. But yes, there are cases like Olaf there, and who I can't pronounce again, and a few other guys too that
I'm sure there's people who thought about Atlantis all the way back. I mean, when they discovered the New World at the end of the 15th century, now all of a sudden there's probably thousands of people thinking about Atlantis, right?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. There was when they discovered the New World, there was tons of people thinking about things like that. The Portuguese spoke about it, and the Spanish, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
But it wasn't exactly quite the same. Like I said, there was this kind of from what I can gather, it seems like the similarities between the chalk mole statue, really simple shit. That chalk mole statue that's like the sitting there with the plate on its hand and it's got the big squared off ears, and it's in Maya country, and it's looks similar to Egyptian headdresses. And that was what got the thing kicked off. And then other iconography, other symbolism, some linguistic similarities. A lot of the early stuff is in Atlantica. It's just sort of, all right. Well, I was not aware that in Atlantica hyperdiffusion is just explicitly, but yeah, it wasn't. I'm not aware of a steady thread going back that far. But
yeah, now even the last thing I want, and I want to ask you a few questions as well about like what you believe in, and so you can ask me whatever you want to. Yeah. I still think with those mistakes, if we agree that those mistakes are pretty bad mistakes, I still think that if the debate topic was, is Atlantis real? I still don't see how Flint lost or how Graham won.
Well, I guess I'd put it like this. Did you ever watch Sugar Ray Leonard fight? I'm giving away my age again. There were certain fights that he against certain opponents where he would always land a late punch. Every round, he would land one late punch. That's it's hard at the end of a fight of 10 rounds where he's doing that. It's kind of hard to give him a win after he's got 10 free shots in. And that's kind of how I feel about this, where it's like you can say, you know, Flint can say that he won, but you know, you come out there like you come out there with sand in your gloves, and Graham's doesn't have sand in his gloves. Well, sure, of course you won.
Well, then I would say to that, what's punches did Graham land at all? Like, I didn't really see him.
No, much. That's just it. Is that he was okay? I'll try to compare.
It seemed like he was focused more on the racism thing than he was on trying to argue. Well, half the 3 hour, 3.5 was him basically kind of going, "I'm public enemy number one. I'm public enemy number one."
So he would frequently, he was deferring to the things that Flint said. So, like if Flint said, shipwrecks should not erode over this amount of time. We should still find them. Graham didn't say, let's dig into that. Is that true? Is that the case? Is that factually correct? Graham assumed that Flint was representing the evidence, right? And he felt like, well, fuck, here's something that I didn't know that kicks me in the guts. It's like if me and you sat down and we started talking about the Bible and I was a biblical expert and I had degrees in it and you didn't, and all of a sudden I start hitting you with things that are like that aren't exactly accurate. And I start old chestnut, like the Council of Nicaea. Oh, those guys are the ones that canonize the Bible. If you guys aren't aware, that's not true.
Right.
So anyway, I want to make sure that
the Trinity and Easter is what they discussed.
I know I'm speaking your language right now, so I want to make sure that my audience is correct.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if I was to say that this Council of Nicaea was what canonized the scriptures, and you were unaware that that's not the case, that may well kick the wind out of your discussion. You may all of a sudden find yourself on the back foot, and I may dominate the next 2.5 hours because you've just had your entire legs kicked out from under you. However, I didn't really kick those out. All I did was tell you they didn't exist anymore, and you laid down. And that's what I think happened there. And I feel like that's where I honestly, like when Graham talks about it, like in his recent video talking about it, where he did kill, like it was unfortunate. I mean, I'll be more blunt about it because I'm more of a blunt person. If I was in his shoes, I would feel flat out betrayed. I would be like, man, I sat down to have a good faith conversation with you and you fucking lied to me. And you openly looked me in the eye and bullshat me. I would be angry as hell, especially the fact that he's a scientist makes that like, it's like I left my kid. I didn't leave my kid to be watched by the neighbor kid. I left my kid to be watched by the pastor and something bad happened. At that point, dude, this is extra fucked. That's like you are supposed to be able to trust Flint to give you good information. That's like his job.
He admitted he got the shipwreck thing wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's you can't really credit. You know, he can't really fault him. I would say you have a point on the Pharaoh thing. And I think that's a strong point. And that wasn't that. And that actually was a really interesting part of the debate that made me go, Joe asked a good question there.
It was a very good question. It's honestly, it's funny. It's one of the first things that I started looking into when I started doing videos on this because it is a strong, you know, if there is no evidence for domesticated food from, you know, 15, 20,000 years ago, that's strong evidence there was no real civilization going on back then.
Yeah.
But it turns out that there is possible evidence for it. But you have
really because I think isn't it just that we can't prove that things haven't gone feral?
Well, no, it comes down to a thing called seed shattering. That's the number one thing you have in plants. Like in nature, a plant wants to drop its seeds the second they're mature. Okay, but we want them to stay on there until we thresh them, right? That's basically, there's a kind of a fine line. You want the stuff, you don't want it to take forever to beat the weed on the grounds to knock all the grains off, but you do want it to stay on there so they don't fall down and get eaten by the rats before you get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start domesticating crops, they end up with the seed shattering is what they call the ability to fall off the plant when it's mature. That gene gets inhibited. And so some way of seed shattering stops. Now in wheat, Flint was right when he's talking about wheat. Yes, there's only one gene for seed shattering, and it is we can see very clearly about when it pops up. But with rice, there's three different genetic pathways, potentially even four, and in some species, multiple times it looks like they've been activated and shut off. So I'm no geneticist, but looking at their margins of error and stuff, this does seem to be the kind of thing that you would expect to see if these plants had gone feral or these plants were domesticated, then gone feral, and then re-domesticated again. It seemed like.
Is there any papers written on that?
Not from the domestication and feralization. I was looking into the papers that I was citing that I'm looking at to extrapolate into my position here. Mm-hmm. Is the ones that where they can't the multiple different pathways to the seed shattering. There's about a 6 to 16,000 year margin of error on when these things were domesticated. They can't tell weedy rice, which is rice. Weedy rice is rice that kind of leaches onto human plants, onto human fields. It's not domesticated rice, but it's not wild rice. It's kind of weaseled its way into between the cracks. They have a really difficult time telling weedy rice from domesticated rice from feral rice when you go back just a few generations or where it came from. There's a lot of rice is a tangled up mess compared to other plants. So if there was a domesticated grain from before the Ice Age or during the Ice Age, rice would be my candidate. It does show.
But then that would be a civilization that's advanced wouldn't just only have rice. They'd have like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, quite possibly. But they might not necessarily have more grains. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you would go to an archaeological site from 5,000 years ago in Asia if the only grain you're going to find is rice. That might not be the case, but I would not. But they're not well known for bread over in that part of the world.
Yeah. So, because I think if there's anything in comparative mythology, one of the things that stands out to me is the similarities of pantheons that spread across Eurasia and Europe and India. You can see different certain sky fathers in India. You have a god called Dias Pitar, sky father in Sanskrit. And then all the way in Italy, Deus Pater, Sky Father.
Oh, wow.
And the languages are so common all the way across the landmass that it does show that the language groups have spread out in different directions. And then you can kind of map how far back it goes. It's around like 5,000, 6,000 BC. They meet towards the Black Sea. So I would say like, that can say something about the connection, the connectiveness of the ancient world, but it doesn't say anything about how advanced they are. I think there's a case to be made that the ancient world was more connected than people think.
Yep.
There's more trade routes, more knowledge of each other.
Absolutely.
Like India knows about the Mediterranean knows about, like, there's a lot more of that going on. But as far as that goes, that's what I would say about like, pushing back the times to like how advanced we were. And another thing, by the time we get Sumer, because Sumer is like called the cradle of civilization, right? Sumer is where it all begins. First dynasty of Egypt, Sumer, right? By the time you get to Sumer, you have a male system, you have a writing system, you have mythology, priesthoods, kings, courts, roads, you have armies, you have metallurgy. So that's the cradle of civilization, but you already have all that. So that all had to come in slowly. So there's a lot of things, there's a lot of stuff happening before we get to Sumer and Dynasty One of Egypt. So I think that's a good thing for people to remember is like, there are some things to be said about pre-civilization, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Answer real quick. Yes, Diane, absolutely. Graham has been vilified for quite a while, so of course he's going to be bitter about it.
I agree. I think she's got a good point.
Yeah,
and I think that it's been happening to him for so long that when somebody just disagrees with him in a more civil way, he reads it all. He reads it like he's reading the other ones, which is not really his fault. He's just kind of in defense mode now.
Yeah, it depends on who it is. Like, Barnhart can disagree with him. He knows I disagree with him. It's one of the funny things that you find in this community. There's so much disinformation going around. Like, Christopher Dunn, you know who he is?
Yeah.
Okay, Christopher Dunn is going to be he's going to start being a regular guest on my channel on live streams like this, and we're going to go through numerous artifacts that he's gone through over the years, and the reason that he wants to do it specifically is because I'm not just a yes man and I'm not just an asshole. He knows I don't agree with him, but if you were to ask his critics, he would never have anybody on to talk to him who's not going to.
But that's going to make his methodology stronger.
That's exactly.
He's got something to make it. It's like iron sharpens iron. You want that pushback.
That's exactly right. And Graham's the same way. Like, I'll give you a great example of the kind of disinformation. And Flint is guilty of this when his video responding to my videos calling him out. He points out that Graham didn't. He talks about Graham's lost civilization had to have had high technology. That's what everybody thinks of Graham when they think of that. Graham specifically says numerous times, he's referring specifically and only to the ability to map longitude. He talks about the ability to move big rocks, and he says this is something that's lost, but he doesn't necessarily have to be high technology. And I wouldn't argue with him. There are certain things it's like, yeah, okay, we don't know how they did certain things.
Yeah. But that's the thing. A good scholar will just say this one's a mystery.
Yeah,
but they don't have to explain everything.
They can't do that.
It's good to have mysteries. Let some young up and coming PhD student tackle it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't just tell them we have it figured out. Like, but that's a good thing that I've noticed with really good scholars. They are willing to say, this part right here, we just have no idea.
We just don't know. Yeah. And it's important, but it's the kind of thing that a lot of these guys like Flint, he needs to be the font of knowledge. He needs to be able to answer those questions. So if he's asked a question, even if he doesn't know the answer, how long does it take to a plant to go feral? He's going to answer. He ain't not going to answer. He's going to answer.
Well, I think in the debate setting, he would do that. But I've had talks with Flint where he said things like, these are some things we just don't know yet.
Yeah.
My guess would be this, you know.
Yeah. And that absolutely. I've said that a number of times that these guys, you can tell the lack of respect that they have for the alternate history community in the way that they talk to us. If they're talking to another scientist, they'll be
careful.
Well, it is the evidence implies all the evidence currently supports this data correlates with. But if they're talking to somebody like us, we can know for a shadow of a doubt that there was no large-scale metallurgy in the Ice Age. We can say it takes thousands of years for this to happen. It's just demonstrable, just hard facts. This is how it is, buddy. And that's it basically. I criticized Flint saying that he treats us like flat earthers, and his reaction to that is basically we are flat earthers. Okay.
That's not the same.
No, it's not even remotely the same.
By the way, the mythicists get called flat earthers, and even though we have beef with the mythicists, I think that they should not be called that.
All right,
that is the ultimate
dismissal. It is. It's
you're basically saying your reality is skewed. You don't even know what's up and down.
It's so skewed. There's no point even discussing it with you.
Yeah,
that's what it really says, and that's
like that's honestly, true. What's more likely that there was that you know, some of these mysteries of ancient civilization might have been, you know, something more advanced, or is the Earth flat? Come on, it's like
the difference. Like, I mean, on a fundamental level, we have seen the round Earth. We have millions of people that have flown that have seen the curvature of the globe.
But no one will believe it if you're a flat earther. Just say, I don't believe it. Yeah,
but when it comes to proving that Atlantis doesn't exist. Are you aware of Russell's teapot, that ideological argument?
I think I heard you mention it one time.
Yeah, it's the idea that there's like a teapot, I think Jupiter or something, that there's a teapot
floating around.
Yeah, and so back when it was first posited, it's like we didn't have any satellites out there. So, okay, the idea that there's a teapot floating around Jupiter is highly unlikely, but is something that is unfalsifiable. We can't prove that it's not true. And that at the most cynical you could get, the most cynical you could ever get would be to say that Atlantis is a Russell's teapot scenario. We can't prove it. But that's not like that with a flat earth, but you can't. The whole thing is that Flint, the reason that he conflated the two is because he wants to be able to dismiss us, to treat our arguments like they're shit, like not even look at them fundamentally, like the same as I would treat if I was going to debunk a flat earther. What do? You take a picture of the fucking globe. Look, dumbass. LOL. Ha ha ha.
That reminds me though of one of the things that I really disagreed with in Graham's video, one of Graham's recent videos. He kind of said it like in a bragging mic drop way at the end of his video, where he said Flint starts from the known to the unknown. I start from the unknown. And that to me was like, huh? because methodology 101, it doesn't have to be science. It doesn't have to be math. It doesn't have to be historical method, scientific method. It doesn't matter. That is just, you always start from the known. It's not, that's not Flint Dibble's quote. Flint Dibble didn't invent start from the known to the unknown. That's everybody in any field of humanities, science, math. Like, that's just like methodology 101. Is you start with the data and then you test out hypotheses and then you observe things. You don't just go, all right, you know what? I'm going to start with elves underneath the ocean. And then I'm going to look for my data and I'm going to find out any data that looks like I can make this thing true. That's backwards. So yeah. that's my criticism towards Graham, is like the methodology that he's promoting seems like you could just make anything true and then say, you can't prove it's not true.
Yeah, you know? I didn't quite think that was what he was saying with that. I thought it was more about how Flint is, like I example Flint needs things to be when he says known, like an example would be the undulating serpent at Chichen Itza at Colcocon. Okay, that the pyramid and the shadow that goes down the side. Flint says in the debate that he is of the opinion that that is a happy accident and that he would need to see other pyramids doing that sort of thing in order for him to believe that it was deliberate. He needs more examples. Now, there's other examples of shadow play with archaeology in that part of the world, or with buildings in that part of the world from that time, but it needs to be exactly like this. And that's where I think where Graham was talking about working from the known to the unknown versus the unknown to the known, where Flint requires a touchstone every step of the way. What one of the discussions I had with him back when we still got along was we were discussing the Sphinx facing due east, and him saying, me claiming it was an equinoctial marker, and him saying, I think it's just a happy accident. And then I mentioned the pyramid at Colcocon, and I ended up telling him that I only need to see one Antikythera mechanism to believe that they built the things and they were precedents. And Flint is the kind of guy that seems to want to see two or three. So I think that's what Graham's coming from. I don't think that Graham is the kind of guy that would say you should build off of no case and cherry pick evidence. I'm not in his head.
I think that's a fair point. I don't think he meant that, but I think it's the way he was pinning his unknown to the unknown against what Flint said, when that's just methodology. But I think that's a fair point. I don't think that I can necessarily say that's what Graham's doing. So yeah. It was just that one statement that I disagree with.
No, I understand.
But I was watching your stream yesterday with somebody, and you were showing these people that are this. And I thought this was a really strong case for like I said, with the ancient mythologies where you have a sky father all the way in India. Yep. And even in Bangladesh, they had the sky father. And then all the way in Italy, it's just the same Dias Pitar with the vowels a little bit different, how to pronounce it. But they're all coming from some ancestor, right? They're all the Indo-Europeans, they call them. And you see similar things happening in the Afro-Asiatic languages, so the southern realms, where they have a lot of similar mythologies spread out too. So that does say that, in the Neolithic, that there were people in communication and culture-wise across pretty long distances, probably. And then that, when I saw that yesterday, that really strengthened that, in my opinion, because that's a pretty staggering, pretty specific,
thing.
So I like what you're doing here with your channel. Cool. I really got to say, I'm following, I'm watching, and
well, thank you, I appreciate it. A lot of that stuff, that stuff to me is the most compelling, is the shared iconography, things like the nubs are a little bit interesting in that regards. I find the metal clamps that you find more compelling in that regards. But the symbolism, like the navel grabbing statues, there's the master of beasts, the guy with the cat on each side, and he's holding these animals at bay with his arms. That shows up in a lot of places in the ancient world. There's certain symbols like that once they hop the pond, right? Once you find them in the New World and the Old World, it's like, okay, It takes it from another spot. It's not like it doesn't have to be ancient high technology to have been remembered as such by the people that wrote about it. They're just the ability for these guys to show up and travel vast differences by navigating the stars and stuff would be considered amazing. Just the ability to move big rocks. So,
Forgot to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Somebody was asking if somebody was saying that Graham believes in telekinesis and moving of rocks.
Yeah,
I
don't say he doesn't believe it.
He's just interested in it.
It's one of the things that he puts on the table as a possibility.
Interesting.
I wouldn't myself. There's a lot of things that I eliminate that people posit. Like, to me, ultimately, what it really comes down to is hominids worked with stone for a very, 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 very long time. We were really good at it. And then when we started working metal, we lost a lot of those skills that father taught to son, that, master taught to apprentice for millennia. So when that skill set was cut, 1,000 years goes by, and there's no way in hell we're going to ever figure out what these guys did when they were, hundreds of thousands of years of stone working and nothing but stone and wood. That was it. Stone was a premier thing. If you were good with working stone, you were top notch in your tribe or whatever. These guys that were building stone walls that didn't have any metal, these guys have been working stone really well for a very long time. I think, honestly, it's going to be something that we find that is basically that's. I think when we figure out how a lot of these things are, it's going to be the kind of thing where you're just like, no shit. Well,
I was a concrete mason and a bricklayer for most of my – I did a demolition and asbestos removal for like 4 years, and then I did like 6 years of concrete and some bricklaying and stuff like that. So when I went to Egypt, I spent some time in Egypt, and I went to Saqqara in particular was the one that really blew me away. Saqqara and Djoser's pyramid, the guy let me down in the bottom, and I saw what looked like wood sticking out of a block. Like it was poured concrete. That's what it looked like to my concrete pouring dumbass. Yeah.
No,
and I'm just looking at it and going, but the guy told me, the guide who was with me says that you're not the only person that thought that. He said, other people have looked at that and go, is that concrete poured? And it was all the way on the bottom. So I can't like go out and touch it and look at it. I have to just see it from a distance. But it looked like there was a piece of wood sticking straight out of a stone.
Yep.
And it was a nice, fresh, clean, smooth stone. Not clean, but you know what I mean? It looked like it was poured. So I'm like, here's another thing about that. My current hypothesis on the pyramids is that they use a lot of water and sand to move things.
Mm-hmm.
That's my – I haven't looked into this shit that much as you have, so I have no idea. No. That's just my guess. Yeah. But I don't – when it comes to concrete, they say the Romans invented concrete. But concrete is not something hard to do. You can accidentally make concrete by just taking crushed up stone and mixing it with water, and it will harden in the sun. That's all concrete is.
Yeah,
crushed up stone with water.
Yeah, if they, I don't have a problem with the idea of geopolymers. The only issue that I have with that is that we can test and see. So right. And that's where like a lot of guys will be like the pyramids were all built out of geopolymers. Like, dude,
you'd be able to see it. Yeah,
they're fucking seashells in them, man.
You could look right at it and tell. So yeah. that's why I don't get strong with that. But I don't. I wouldn't be surprised if there was something they did with, mixing some sort of pitch or something.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that it's not worth. Okay. We know the Romans did it, and the Romans were a low tech society by modern standards. Right.
Yeah.
At that point, these are the kind of things that shouldn't be taken off the table, but they end up like, because of the whole social aspect of this, which is what I end up talking about a lot on my channel, it seems like anymore, but the whole social aspect of it ends up with this weird spot where the geopolymer thing gets rejected because of who brings it up. If you go to certain places in the world and say, maybe these guys use some ancient form of concrete to make this, that's not an insane thing to say, but if the words came out of Graham Hancock's mouth or Christopher Dunn's mouth or Jimmy Corsetti's mouth or Ben Van Kirkwick's mouth or my mouth nowadays, fuck, it doesn't matter then. Well, now the geopolymer is off the table, buddy. No ifs, ands, way. And so that's where it's like, come on, man. We know that ancient people had the ability. Like you say, it's really not hard, but
yeah. That kind of shocks me more that they couldn't figure out how to mix crushed up stout with water.
Honestly, it's kind of funny when they say that one of the things that alternate historians do is try to steal say that indigenous people are stupid or take away their achievements. It's like you try to say they're so dumb they couldn't figure out concrete, but the Romans did.
Right. Another thing. Like, how does that work?
The white guys managed it, huh? But over in South America, they couldn't have figured that one out. Down in Egypt, they couldn't have figured that one out. But
that's a really funny point.
It's like, come on, guys.
That's a funny point.
Yeah, well, I think that most people are aware that people that combat racism in arenas that are not inherently racist tend to like be like that.
A lot of these people, this is what I noticed about dealing with scholars for some years now. Obviously, they're not all like this. Most of them aren't. Most academics are cool as hell, and they're all good people. But you run into certain academics who you can tell they came from a family of academics who are from a family of academics, from a family of the whole line of family are all just – none of them ever worked 9 to 5. None of them ever poured concrete. None of them. They all just go straight from high school. They get into these schools easily, you know, because their whole families, you know, scholarships. That's what I meant. Yeah. They get their scholarships. They go to these great schools. They go to these Ivy League schools. They're very privileged. And these are the types of people who are like racist, racist, racist. But like they themselves live in like the nicest neighborhoods. They're not.
They really don't know.
So many examples of this in the last 3 years. And like I said, it's not most academics, but you see them. You see those types of people who are just like, they're like creatures. They're not, they're awkward to be around. They're not fun. They're just, they're just like weird people who it's almost like they're not even real people. Like, is that a real personality or is it somebody who's trying to be correct in every single way by what the standard of academia wants them to be, because they grew up with academics who know all the politically correct things and here's the politically correct way. And if they meet somebody who's not educated, they'll mistreat them for like, you're a racist. How'd you not know this? And like, I've seen this a few decent examples of this in the last 3 years. Like I said, most academics are cool though.
Yeah, most of them are cool. There's certain things like that where it's when they go into fight. Like I said, if they're going to battle racism and they're not like actually addressing things that are salient points. Like I jokingly say it, but seriously, I'm poor white trash, man. I work construction and I walked the streets home from work many nights, right? And there are places like. I grew up in Southern Illinois and I was back there for about a year in the mid 2000s. It's almost every week in that part of the country that there was, this is before the BLM thing kicked off. There was people dying just walking home from work. You're a white dude walking in the wrong neighborhood or you're a black dude walking in the wrong neighborhood. And the racism there is palpable. I knew I was living up here when the BLM shit first kicked off in Ferguson.
Buffalo's like that too. Still.
Yeah. I knew immediately when I saw Ferguson happen. I knew immediately. I'm like, okay, the whole country, the whole world knows the South is racist, but they're about to find out that the Midwest is that way too bad. And
Buffalo is super segregated. Even today, you still see it. South Buffalo is where all the Irish live. West side's where all the Puerto Ricans live. East side's where all the black people live. North Buffalo's where the Italians live. And it's just drawn up that way. And it's like, it still has the remnants of this division. And it has that weird old 50s culture still kind of sleeps in or creeps in from now and then. Not as bad as it was, but it was.
Yeah. I'm big in psychology. I talk about that a lot. And one of the ways that I'm of the opinion that racism, sexism, a lot of these kinds of isms, anytime that you find a place in your head where you other people, where you select, you find them in a different group than yourself, you need to be aware that that's when you're going to find reasons to dislike them. And it's a natural human thing. If you don't believe me, find me the prison in this country that's not racially segregated by the inmates. You fucking find me that. You push comes to shove, and everybody falls just naturally into line.
Oh, it's the way it is.
They identify as. It's sad. It's not a good thing. But the people that are like, I'm above being racist. It's
not not when you go to prison.
Well, you're it's on a daily, on a fucking daily, you're not.
I can tell you that for sure.
Prison's just going to make you look at it. But on a daily, you're not. You're just because you think that that way is not the case. You still consider that black person or whatever as somebody other than yourself. And if that's the case, other than your group, and you, if that's the case, you need to be aware, in my mind, you need to be aware that there is a propensity in the human mind to dislike them for no fucking good reason. We right. just do it. Tribes. You go down to tribes in old school where people still live close to the earth, and they can be speaking the same language, and they'll tattoo and ritually scar themselves differently to make sure that they've got their races separate. Mm-hmm. They're not. They are. For whatever fucking reason, we do that ugly shit, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, trust me, I know that. Yep.
Sorry, should address this here really quick. Kinsei Sensei, seashells in the rock doesn't mean it's natural. Diamatritus, earth could be an ingredient in the concrete, pH level to contribute in some ways. Yeah, potentially, but I mean, using the seashells that it does heavily fight against the idea of it being a geopolymer. And also they tend to be able to do a few things. They can test the crystalline structure on the inside and compare it to other rocks that it could have been potentially quarried from. They can look at the stratigraphy and see if it was like laid down naturally, if it was mixed up in a vat. So mm-hmm. My thing is the geopolymers was something we can test for and we should be. In a lot of these cases, we're just not.
I think the mixed man-made, any type of stuff like that would fade quicker too. Like it would row it away quicker, if I'm not mistaken, than a natural form rock.
I would imagine you're probably right. I mean, the Roman concrete seems to do pretty well, but I'm not sure as to. I haven't done the research on the
erosion. I'm just guessing.
That makes sense. I mean. You're a concrete guy. I would imagine that would be the case, but
I mean, because I'm used to going to old sites that were done in the 70s and we're redoing it as a new site. So, but that's new concrete. So I don't know. The Roman concrete lasts.
Yeah.
I remember my boss always talking about that. Back in the Roman days, we wouldn't be back here in 30 years. You always say stuff like that because we joke around like that. I pulled something up from Wikipedia. Oh, yeah. This is a while ago. But this I think your audience would like this. So this is back. We were talking about the people with the hands, right?
Yeah.
So this is the goddess. It's anglicized as Cybele, but I can't stand that. I like to go with the Greek pronunciation, Kubeli. Kubeli from the Greeks and Roman goddess, right? This is her, right? But check this out. There is this seated woman from 6,000 BC. Notice anything particular about this? I'm just want to see if you can't guess, I'll help you out.
Well, off the bat, to me, like the beast on either side.
Yes.
Like, yep. The master of beasts.
Look, two lions. Well, this one has one, but she normally has two. Like if we keep going, she normally look. Here's the two lions. Right.
You seen those like Göbekli Tepe and stuff like Karkaron Tepe?
Is there a woman with two lions at Göbekli Tepe?
Oh, there.
There's two lions again.
Yeah, let me find.
Two lions again. That's 2nd century AD. Now, here's the thing. Here's the crazy part. Now, I didn't even get to the crazy part about this. This is a Roman Kybele from the Common Era, C50 AD, right? And it's in Rome, obviously. And this one's all the way in Anatolia. So let's read. You might be like, okay, this is probably a coincidence. You got a goddess with two lions. Big deal. What's the big point? 6,000 years spread apart from each other, right? 6,050 years spread apart from each other. Well, it turns out, do you know where this goddess was imported from? According to the primary sources of the Romans themselves, at 200 BC, we have the exact same date, 204 BC, exactly. It was under the Sibylline books that said, go and get this statue from drumroll, Anatolia. They went to the Phrygians and they found the statue from the Phrygians and they brought it to Rome. And then she became one of the head goddesses of the Roman pantheon all the way up until the time Christianity kind of takes over the religious system. But this is from the same area. This is from Anatolia, and it's the woman with two gods. So there's a lot of it. I'm not the first person to notice this, obviously. This isn't my discovery. There's a lot of people who have written on the possibility that the Phrygian mother, Phrygian great mother, is actually descended from this particular ancient Neolithic, because this is before this copper age. This is Neolithic. This is Stone Age. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the prime example of something from the Stone Age making its way into the modern world, modern era.
It's pretty crazy when you think about it like that.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can. I was trying to find. I'm still not the best at sharing the screens, and this stupid thing didn't. I can't save the image, but it's. I have to screen cap the damn thing. At Cybark in Turkey, there's an image that is. Oh, grab it from. There's an
Turkey.
Image.
Turkey's my favorite place for archaeology.
Yeah, it is pretty. It is pretty interesting. I'm not. It's not letting me share it.
Black Sea region in general. Black Sea, all even the north, even where like modern day Ukraine is. I love that spot. I love that area because it's so old. It goes back so far, you know. I mean, we talk about Egypt all the time. We talk about Sumer all the time, and it's because they had like real civilization. They had governments in place, but that Black Sea region is very. Very ancient, and it has a lot of history there, just not as like condensed, more spread out, more steppe, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, see, cool.
Okay, and you see the two lions.
I see the two lions, man. Yeah, is that a goddess or a god?
That they're not sure. It's in Cybarek, Turkey. So we're talking at the Paz Tepeler site. This is like 12,000 years old. Now this is Dr. Martin Sweatman, if you know him from the Göbekli Tepe Pillar 43.
Oh, there's the one I was just looking at.
Yep.
So does this scholar think this is related? I wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
oh, and by the way, when they talk about the Great Mother in the Roman sources, in the Greek sources,
mm-hmm.
they talk about her as if she's the oldest thing ever. Strabo, I'll give you if you guys don't believe me, go read Strabo. When Strabo talks about the Great Mother, he's writing in 50 BC, something like that. When he's talking about the Great Mother, it's as if he's talking about the oldest thing ever.
Yeah.
So the evidence so far is always pointing in that direction every time. There's nothing that I found that's pointing against it. So
it's pretty interesting. It's wild how much you see of these same kind of things where there's. A similarity between these kinds of symbolism that is so far flung across the world. Like that symbol of a person holding two lions at bay is extremely common. Hell, there's a symbol at one of these things at Göbekli Tepe or at Karan Tepe, I believe is where it is. Let me look that up real quick because it's pretty wild.
That's a cool site too.
Yeah, I do have to get going before too.
Yeah,
much
yeah, longer. Yeah. I know you had to get going soon. Yeah.
I know it sucks, but I do want.
Oh, this is fun. This has been great.
This has been, yeah, it's been really good. I enjoyed chatting with you. There is a. Oh, come on. Oh, let's try this instead. Sometimes that's why I was tooting that dude's horn so hard yesterday about that. That
definitely book. Send me that article that we looked at before after this.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'll have to find the image, but there's an image of I don't want to keep looking for it forever, but there's an image at one of the tepes there, must not be Karan Tepe, but that is a guy with one arm up, one arm like between him and the animal, and there's a bull coming right at him, and it looks just like Orion and Taurus, and this is like 12,000 years ago.
So oh, like, yeah, I saw that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's
so. And it has the same number of stars. That's that was more shocking to me. Mm-hmm. Where this it has like the dots, like stars, right?
I don't think this is a relief carving. It's not one of the caves. Oh, but okay. But I know what you're talking about there too, and that is wild as well.
That one's crazy.
That's what you know. If you go up and look at the night sky, those three stars in Orion's belt really just punch in the nose.
They are so bright. Well, another one that's bright too is the one under Taurus with the red Regulus star. Sirius. That one stands out. Regulus and Sirius is obviously isn't really bright. Those, because I'm not, I wouldn't be surprised if some, because Graham thinks that they were looking at the sort of similar constellations, and a lot of people push back against that. But those stars are always bright in the same way. So I wouldn't be surprised if they had similar maps of the sky.
Oh yeah, not
identical but similar.
Very, it would be very close, and a lot of them will probably be very close, depending on what it is that you're looking at. Like those three stars in Orion's belt are going to end up as a line or whatever.
They will do. Yeah,
you know, they're going to end up in whatever culture looks at them. There's other ones like
Orion's one of the oldest ones, because you find that in Babylonian and Greek.
Yep, it's the Great Hunt. Even they sometimes figure that, and there's the stories of the Pleiades from a long time ago, where they're pretty sure the Seven Sisters and stuff like that is referring.
Oh, and another one, Milky Way. Now that's a very specific thing to call it.
Yep,
the Greeks have their own version. They say that I think it's Gaia's milk pours out or something. Then the Vedic people have a different story, but it's also milk that causes it. So they have two milk stories. That says something. That says, okay, there's probably some kind of, so there are the Milky Way too. Like they could have called it the light way, the something else, the one, like it could have been a million things. Milk is very specific. But the fact that both the Indians and the Greeks both call it milk
is interesting.
I mean, yeah, it is interesting.
No, it's definitely, there's a lot of things like that that really you see more connections across, you know, like one of the things that I've mentioned before, as far as this stuff goes, is like, you know, mom and dad, but for whatever reason, we end up with ma and pa here in English. And, you know, in Korean, amoni is mom and apogee is father. The difference between the two is ma and pa. And, you know, of course, these have vastly different linguistic backgrounds, but there's these little things like that. You just see almost anywhere in the world, it seems like the mother name starts with the m sound and the father name starts with the p sound. Not everywhere, but in a lot of places, that seems to be the case. And it's not, it's funny.
Wait for this?
Yes.
Oh, my bad. I'm listening.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. There's funny things to me. It's funny to me that they push back so hard on the idea that cultures could have shared these things. It's like, you know, like the bow or the atlatl. These things were almost certainly invented in one place and spread around the world. Guys didn't sit down and hammer all this stuff.
I think it was the steppe region. That's what I guess. And that's where the cultivation of the vine was discovered, right around the Black Sea region. So they start to drink wine. They're starting to get, that's a game changer. Look at this. What I just pulled up. Speaking of what you were speaking on, this is the word father. Now, all the way over here, you got pita, right? And all the way over here, you could see it's like a rainbow. It's like a blending. All the way over here, padre, pere, father, father. And then it's like higher, pader, pader. Fata, but you can see the connection, right?
Yeah.
That's the word father. By the way, another mind-blowing one, the word for God in English is actually cognate with an Indo-European word that means gehu, which means to pour, libate, and it's the same word that we get the word kukeon and haoma and soma from. And those are all psychedelic potions used in rituals for the gods. So the word for God in English is connected to the word for psychedelic potions in other farther out.
That's crazy.
There's a lot of weird shit like that, but like this is the prime example. Like this, there, and I actually found out that after the whole Aryan pushback, like the Aryans really messed up a lot of stuff in academia. And there was a lot of pushback against this on the screen. Like people were like, they didn't want it. There's no connection. Don't look there. And now it's like there's so much overwhelming evidence that they're, that language families, the Indo-European language branch is legit, that now it's like, who cares about the Nazis? There's something true here.
Yeah.
Right. But like there was a point in time, I think it was like from the 50s to the 70s, where people were like, don't look there. Don't look there. But now everybody just doesn't care anymore. But like it's overwhelming that the case is the Indo-European languages are a thing. Maybe it doesn't. The thing that the Nazis were doing, they're trying to make it about race, that this was all one race. It's like, no, it's just languages, different races adopting the same language. That's all.
same language and some cultural symbolism, right? I mean, then that's
and cultural, like I said, like I said, with the gods and goddesses, you find Usha, and then you find Eos, and they're cognates in those languages. Usha is the Vedic dawn goddess. Eos is the Greek dawn goddess. You find, like I already mentioned, Dies Pitar. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of gods and goddesses, but you can find them in the Indian Vedas, and they have very similar sounding names and similar roles and functions as we find in Italian or Latin, Roman gods and Greek gods. Wow. So there's something to be said about the spread of culture in the Copper and Bronze Age that was widespread.
And definitely there's a lot of it that's lost to history, I would think, for sure. On that point, I think I'm going to have to call it a night here, Neil. Yep. I'm sorry. I've got to...
No, you're good. This has been fun, man.
Yeah, this has been great.
I enjoyed hanging out.
Yeah, we'll have to do this again sometime. Next time, we'll do it on your channel. I appreciate you. Appreciate you letting me host this one. And yeah, we'll do this again. I've enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Well, thanks for everyone for having me.
Yeah, everybody, make sure. Is there anything you wanted to pimp before we take off?
Just look up Gnostic Informant and check it out. Yeah. It comes right up. So yeah, I'm at the point now. I think you're probably there now too, where you can just look up Dedunking and you're going to come right up. Yep. So I don't even have to give out URLs or anything. Just look up Gnostic Informant. Yep. You'll find it.
I put a link in the description. So
oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, for his channel. So you can just go click on that. And awesome. Thanks everybody for coming and watching. And I'll see you guys here in a few days. And one